But I just want to plow in and start out with the question, why this subject? Why the subject of management? Well, for one thing, the larger an organization grows, the more important management principles become. That's obvious. When an organization is small, it can be run by one man, and he can violate all the principles he wishes, I suppose, and be satisfied with the results. But the larger it grows, the more complicated relationships become and communications become, and fundamental principles need to be introduced into the system so that satisfactory results are produced. If the Lord leads, and if the navigator growth continues over the next 15 years as it has the past several years at a 15% increase in area reps each year, we will see a rather substantial growth. Here you have a map of the United States depicting area representatives in 1970. Now, this doesn't show contact points. This just shows our area representatives. At the 15% projected growth rate in 15 years, the U.S. will look like this. This is just area reps. This does not include contact points. And this is just in 15 years. This is also based on the supposition that half of the area representatives produced during the next 15 years will stay in the United States and the other half will go overseas. So we're looking at half of the staff of area representatives. About 435.
In the States?
Yes. 435 dots on here, approximately.
How many were there?
Well, now there are about 114, and if you add 15% to that, that's 17 this year, 20 next year, 23 the next year, and in 15 years you'll have over 800.
What is the total of area reps right
now in the U.S.? Oh, less than 50.
What was it,
114? 114 area representatives in the Navigator work today.
Less than 50.
Worldwide. So if you wanted to do your own projection on that, you'd add 15% each year to that total, and in 15 years you'd have over 800.
Rod, is this a 15% a year growth in the U.S., which means a 30% growth overall?
This is 15% worldwide.
Okay.
But right now, the United States is producing the majority of that growth.
Which
means right now we're really looking to the U.S. work to produce almost 30%. And the last 3 years, we have averaged about a 14.5% on that.
In the U.S.?
Yes. Our objective was a 15% annual growth rate, and we have, over the 3 years, I think it's come out 14.5 something.
Do you know what percent the U.S.?
No, I mean 30. I'm sorry, I'm confusing the figures. We want a worldwide growth rate of 15%. But because the majority of the area reps are only coming out of the United States, we have been producing over the past 3 years close to 30% increase for the U.S. work.
And in actuality, around the world, what has the percentage growth been?
14.5. And the point is here that by this time, many of you will be responsible for managing many of these newer men. So if as a staff we don't begin to develop management skills now, we'll find ourselves in a predicament similar to that of Moses, who found his job too complicated, too complex, until of course he took Jethro's seminar on supervision, as recorded in Exodus 18, verses 18 through 24. And when you know the principles of management or the fundamentals of management and you read through this, you see that they're in there. The same fundamentals that business corporations and or governments use today, the fundamentals of management, you'll find them. A little obscure maybe, but they're there. Another reason for this subject is that Sani is concerned about it. And over the years, it's been clearly demonstrated that Sani sees more clearly than anyone else what our needs are. And I think back to not too many years ago when there were no divisions and there were no regions in the American work or anywhere in the world. And at a meeting of the top area representatives of that time, Sani introduced the idea of dividing the United States up into regions and having regional directors, and it went over like a ham sandwich in a synagogue. Nobody bought it. I mean, nobody. And so he backed off, and the next time these men were together, 6, 8, 10 months later, he introduced the idea again and then got some nibbles, and it was decided at that second meeting that Jack Mahal would begin to experiment with the concept of regions and developing regions, and he would be an acting regional director. And that's the way we got started. But the point is that Sani sees more clearly further down the road than any of the rest of us. Time and time again we've seen this. And he is concerned that we will develop some management skills. Sees the need for them. You didn't bring your guitar.
I think I was implementing
that one. We were just talking about one of the reasons why this subject on management. And we were pointing out here that the growth of the work is one of the reasons, one of the compelling reasons why we need to develop management skills. Here is what the U.S. looks like right now. This map depicts area representatives, just area representatives. And over the next 15 years, at our present growth rate of 15% a year, this is what the work will look like in the United States in 1985. And if we don't develop management skills now, the complexity of this is going to put us out of business. A third reason, when a person applies fundamentals to his task, to his job, whatever it is, he accomplishes more, he gets better results, etc. And Don Mitchell, in his new book, Top Man, Mitchell has been a president of large corporations such as General Telephone and Sylvania. Does a lot of lecturing for the American Management Association. Sani heard him at one of his president management conferences. Mitchell says, fundamentals cannot be habitually violated if you wish to succeed. And this must apply to us also in the realm of management. He also points out that fundamentals are simple in appearance, but extremely difficult to apply. I was talking with Dan Green. Dan Green is an ex-Marine lieutenant who is now in Leroy's division in Tucson, Arizona, working with college students at the University of Arizona. Dan had lived in Leroy's home for a couple of years and then went down there, and we were talking about some of these fundamentals, and he said, well, you know, when I graduated from OCS, is that right, OCS? He said, I could articulate many of the fundamentals of leadership or war or whatever it was, but when I got to Vietnam, I was so involved in what was going on around me and in the fighting and in my responsibilities, he says, I never thought of the fundamentals that I had been taught at all. And he said, I noticed the same is true in the ministry. I hear Leroy at a conference, or Leroy shares some principles with me on how to do the ministry, but when I get out on the campus, I forget about those, and I just get involved in doing what I'm doing. And I think this is a very important point. He said, how do you relate what you're doing to the fundamentals? Well, I think at the beginning you have to back off from this and you have to analyze, what did I do and how well did I succeed and what were some of the problems, what were the failures, and how do these things relate to the fundamentals? What did the doctor say?
Mostly muscles fat, no evidence of cranial pressure, just the muscles are shaking.
And no fractures?
Apparently not. Thank you.
That's good.
So, mostly hot compresses and Turkish towels, and it could be 2 days or 2 weeks.
But you'll have a little discomfort,
yeah,
huh?
Just the neck and the top of the head.
Yeah. Well, we're glad that you hit your toughest point there.
York's had a lot going for me. It was in my head. Pardon us for disturbing you.
That's quite all right. We were just talking about some of the reasons why the subject, and I've reviewed a little bit of that for you. Russ, on this projection here, we have a projection of what the U.S. work will look like in 1985 in terms of area representatives. This doesn't depict contact points, which there may be twice as many. And this is what the area work looks like today. Upside down, but I mean, you get the impression. I mean, looking up. But there's the difference.
Question. Are the locations picked or are they just kind of...
No, just Dolores's strategy.
I noticed how many in New Mexico. I didn't say, what in New Mexico?
Jackrabbits.
Military bases and college campuses down there.
Yeah. Around Tucson in Arizona. Oh, New Mexico. Oh, yeah. We've got a complex of military bases right down here, down in El Paso and up at Alamogordo. And then up in Albuquerque, you've got some campuses. But that's just... She knows that area. That's her home state. But the difficulty of learning to apply principles, we do have to step back and reflect on what we're doing and what we have done and some of our mistakes. And to know these principles, to simply know them, is not to have developed the skill in using them. And I think we psych ourselves out sometimes. We read a book on how to use time, and then we think, well, now that I know that, I'll go on to something else. But we haven't actually taken any of those principles and brought them into focus in our experience and in our lives and begun to work with them so that we develop the skill of using them. Management fundamentals also have broad application. And again, Mitchell in his book says, all managers use the same fundamentals. From the standpoint of management fundamentals, there is no essential difference between the lowest level foreman who has 6 workers reporting to him and the president of a corporation who has 750,000 employees. There's no essential difference. The fundamentals are all the same. So the question is, what are these fundamentals? What are the fundamentals of management? And let's take 60 seconds, and you jot down on your note pages there what comes to your mind as the fundamentals of management. This is not to be turned in. I just want you to think about this for a moment and to fix in your mind what these fundamentals are as they come to your mind. So let's take 60 seconds and just jot down what to you are the fundamentals of management. Okay, time is up. In spite of the fact that there are literally thousands of books on the subject of management, there seems to be rather good agreement on the fact that the fundamentals of management are these: planning, organizing, leading, and evaluating. And if you need a handle to hang on to it with, you can remember the little word pole. Now, as you look at that list, you think, oh, yes, but how about, you know, motivation, or how about this, or how about that? Well, these are the fundamentals of management. There are, in addition to the fundamentals, techniques and tools, essential elements that go with these fundamentals. And the essential elements of management would look something like this. Under planning, you would have your objectives, and under your objectives, you would have your activities, and the activities are the means whereby you accomplish your objectives. And then also for planning, you have the tool of budgeting. Under organizing, the function of structuring, and this has to do with how you establish your organization. And there are basically two ways to structure. There is geographical and there is functional. The United States is structured geographically. The headquarters office is structured departmentally or functionally. Staffing is locating available personnel and putting them in best opportunities. Delegating is the process whereby you agree with people who are working for you what their job will be, what the limits of their authority are, what they will be held responsible for. And training is whatever training is necessary for the person to whom you've delegated to do his job. And so on, down through leading and evaluating. These are the techniques of management and the tools of management. About a year and a half ago, Jack Mahal and I attended a three-day seminar at the University of Wisconsin. The subject was Management by Objective, or MBO as it's known. And this is a total management concept. What we're looking at here is what we would call traditional management, and it has a history that goes way, way back. Management by objective has a 15-year history, approximately, and it embraces these basic fundamentals of management, but with special emphasis upon the principle of objectives, of every person in the organization having his own stated objectives, and then the whole process, the objectives, and his work then is evaluated on the basis of those objectives. So MBO, or Management by Objective, is really a total management philosophy, but with special emphasis on objectives and evaluating. And that's what we are going to talk about. We're going to be talking about objectives, what kinds there are, and how to write them, and then once they're written, how to use them, how to use them in evaluation. There are three different types of objectives within an organization. Now, we in the past have talked about family objectives and personal objectives, so those are just other areas of objectives, but organizationally, there are three types of objectives. First, there are senior objectives. Senior objectives. In our organization, senior objectives are the overall objectives of the total organization. These are established or set by the president, by Sani, and his team. And he thinks of his team as being the divisional directors and those at headquarters, two or three people at headquarters, who help him in his planning and in his leadership responsibilities. Senior objectives are set by the chief executive and his team for the overall objectives of the organization. And these are set for periods of time, for 1, 3, and 10 years. And this makes these short range and a medium range and long range. Let me tell you what this is not. This is not a senior objective. That is an overall purpose. It's necessary for an organization to clearly define its overall purpose. And many large corporations in America have gone out of business because they did not really understand what their purpose should have been. Mitchell says the railroad industry in America never understood their true purpose, and therefore the industry is becoming distinct and is in deep trouble. If we ask ourselves, what is the purpose of IBM Corporation? And we think, well, let's see, IBM. I'm aware of typewriters they produce and of computers they produce. I suppose their purpose would have to do with the production of office equipment. But their purpose is actually to provide a means of, an efficient means of providing the necessary information needed in business. And when you have that kind of a purpose for a corporation, you just change the whole concept of what they're doing. And in the navigators, we've called this sometimes our navigator objective, but it really isn't. It's an overall purpose. So that's not what an objective is not. Here's what an objective might be or would be, in fact is. The production of 17 new area representatives by the end of this year is that's an overall senior objective. This is a worldwide objective, the production of 17 new area representatives this year. We'll get two of these out of Scotty's division, and one or two out of Doug's, and then the rest have to come from the United States. Another senior objective might be to produce 1,000 disciple makers. That would be new. Or it might be to produce 4,000 disciples. Yes, there's a little discussion still underway in Lauren's mind on whether or not he will set senior objectives for disciples or disciple makers. So I'm using this as an illustration. We definitely know that this is a senior objective. Another senior objective would be to increase gift income by 15% annually. Those are senior objectives. Then, in addition to senior objectives, we have what are known as line objectives. And a line objective is objectives set in the organization that contribute directly to the accomplishment of the senior objective. Every person in the Navigators who is in a ministry assignment would write line objectives because what he does contributes directly toward the accomplishment of senior objectives. These should be written for periods of 1 year and 3 years. And eventually, Lauren wants every navigator to have his ministry objectives written for 1 and 3 years. Any questions on the line objective? And then lastly, there is a type of an objective called a supportive objective. And this is for work that must be done, but that does not contribute directly toward the accomplishment of senior objectives. Therefore, a supportive objective would be the type of thing that takes place at a headquarters office or at Glen Eyrie. A supportive objective would also have to do with corporate objectives, and you could combine the terms, but we use the term corporate objective for things that have to be done and that are really the responsibility of the president. For instance, to develop our ability to set objectives for and evaluate progress in the major areas of Navigator Ministries. This is a corporate or a supportive objective. To develop a strategy for the 70s in terms of senior objectives and programs of activities. To see to it that we are operating on an updated 3-year plan in terms of ministry, men, and money. To ensure that every NAV director and rep is operating with a job description and an annual performance plan in terms of objectives and plans. These are things that are corporate objectives that Sani feels responsible to work on. So in this sense, they're supportive. To update and communicate our uniform personnel and finance policies and procedures. To develop and institute a top-level program for staff development. To develop an international headquarters personnel department serving the entire work worldwide. That type of thing has to be done. It's sort of background work. That's supportive objective. Any questions on that? Last year when I was with the servicemen's workers in Europe, one of the men said that the subject of objectives turned him off, not on. And so we pursued this a bit, and he pointed out that he had written objectives for the last 2 or 3 years, but nothing had ever been done about them. He had written them, turned them in, and then they were filed and forgotten. So he said, why write them? And I thought, that's right. He's absolutely right. But in the meantime, we had taken the course at the University of Wisconsin, and it became very clear to us that the reason we hadn't done any more previously was just a lack of knowledge. We didn't know what to do. We didn't know how to write objectives that were meaningful. And we didn't know how to use them once they had been written. By meaningful, I mean measurable, and several other factors too, but here, for instance, is 2 or 3 objectives written in the typical manner in which we wrote them in those days. Strengthen the organization of the region. That was an objective turned in by a regional director. To strengthen the organization of the region. That was his objective. Well, it's rather meaningless. It's impossible to measure, really. Another was develop long-range plans. A third was promote an emphasis on building in depth. And another was continue emphasis on staff development. And though these are all important things to do, yet to write objectives in this manner means that they are meaningless and almost useless. And this is what we've done in the past. So if you've had this experience, why, hopefully we can resolve that problem in your mind. Jack and I found that by using the formula given to us at the University of Wisconsin for writing objectives, that we could write our objectives that were really meaningful and helpful to us. And they gave us a formula then that was that by following the formula, we were able to get away from the problems that had left our objectives so general and so of little value to us. The formula is to begin each statement of objective with the word to, follow the word to with an action verb, then follow it by the desired results, and finally a date, so that there is a deadline or a target period, a target date. We have this phrase, at a cost not to exceed, in parentheses, primarily because we would not be using this in each of the objectives that we would be writing. And the reason we wouldn't have to include this in them is because we have an overall budget. You have your own overall budget. And at the time you turn in your objectives, you'll be turning in your budget. So your objectives will have to be accomplished within your budget. So you don't have to write a cost factor into every one of the objectives. Any questions? Well, taking this formula, then, what would our first step be if we were to start writing objectives? Were you going to comment, Russ?
You're asking the question?
Yes.
Repeat the question. You would probably first concentrate on the desired results.
Yes. The question was, taking this formula, what would our first step be in writing our objectives? And our objectives would be line objectives. And the function of a line objective is to fulfill or help fulfill a senior objective. So we would ask ourselves, in my situation, in my area, in my ministry, what is the most significant contribution that I can make toward accomplishing the senior objectives? If I was a regional director, or an area representative with a certain amount of maturity and experience, and I had a man out here in a contact point, I might conclude that the most significant thing I could do would be to get that man ready to become an area representative. If I was a younger area representative or a man in a contact point, then I would evaluate my area, my ministry in that area, and I'd say, well, now can I come up with some disciple makers this next year? Or can I come up with some disciples? What is the most significant thing that I can do to accomplish those senior objectives? Does that communicate? I'd have to evaluate, I'd have to actually evaluate before I began to write my objectives. I'd say, what are my resources? Who do I have in my area to help me with the ministry? What is my potential? And then I would write my objectives based on this formula. Here is a list of guidelines for writing objectives. I thought that this would be of help to you, so I had this page mimeographed, and I'll give you a copy of it when you leave here, so you do not have to jot down or copy this. You don't have to make notes on this, because I'll give you a page with these. But these are some guidelines and some thoughts on writing objectives, and it also includes the formula down here at the bottom of the page. But to begin with, an objective must be in writing. Secondly, it must contribute toward accomplishing senior objectives. Thirdly, it must be measurable. See, when we say I want to strengthen the organization in my region, there's nothing measurable. If something is measurable, it needs to be stated quantitatively. We need to use numbers or we need to use percentages. We need to talk about producing 17 area representatives or an increase of 15%, or we could say a satisfactory zone. We could say a 10 to 12% increase would be satisfactory. But to be measurable, if it's quantitative, we have to use numbers. If it's qualitative, if it's something that we're working on, for instance, in a man's life, a training objective is qualitative. You can't boil it down to numbers. So then you talk in terms of the man's behavior. And this becomes measurable because you say, when he is trained, he will be able to present the bridge illustration, or he will be leading a Bible study group, or he will, you know, these are the things he will do. And these are the things he will not do. He will not smoke or chew or go with girls that do, and things like that. That's a qualitative objective. But it still needs to be measurable. Then it should be attainable. And in working with some of our men in the Orient and in Europe on these objectives, we started with them a year and a half ago on some of these things, and we found that they were a little unrealistic in their thinking and set some of their objectives a little too high. Some of them they were right on target with, but in the areas of evangelism, they were going to evangelize, you know, 2,000 or 3,000, and they were a little high. But also they should be challenging, not business as usual. The man that taught the course had a little spiel that he gave on the kinds of feline life that exist in management and business, and he talked about the pussycat type of manager who was a business as usual guy, and then he talked about the fat cat, and this was the manager who was a little bit more aggressive and made all the profits and gained all the advantages and promotions that the pussycat did, plus. And then he had in the highest strata of feline life for the managers, the tiger. And so this was his concept here. Not business as usual, but something that's challenging. Then also we set a time limit for a target period. And for your target periods, why we go by the year here, and your next target period would begin June 1st and end May 31st, 1971. So when you write your objectives, you would be writing them for that particular target period. June 1, 1970 through May 31, 1971. The objective must indicate the desired results. It should relate to priority responsibilities. The question is often asked, how many objectives should a man have? Ideally, if he had one or two or four or five, fine. That would be ideal. But sometimes he needs more than that. Maybe he needs as many as 8 or 10. But if we write more than 4 or 5, we have to do it with the realization that as soon as we get above 4 or 5, we are dissipating our energy in the accomplishment of that many objectives. Objectives should be written by the individual. Each person in the organization writes his own objectives. Those, of course, are subject to approval by his team leader, by his area rep, his regional director, or his DD. And when Scotty turns in his objectives for his division, those are subject to Sani's approval. And then down here we have the formula again, to begin with the word to, followed by an action verb, desired results, date, and. If it's a project for which there's no budget, then you need to estimate the budget. Questions on this? On writing objectives.
I can see where this applies at the division level. For someone with a contact point is concerned with disciple makers, makers of disciple makers, who are not necessarily going to be navigators. How does he consider that in line with the senior objective? That's not going to produce any area right now.
One of our senior objectives will be to produce makers of disciple makers or disciple makers, or maybe even disciples. Because it's really not the navigator objective simply to build an organization, but to contribute more effective people to the body of Christ.
We have to have the senior objectives clearly defined to us before we can write an objective, which we really don't.
This is theoretically true. I say theoretically because this process of management can be introduced at the middle level of management in an organization, and this has been done. For instance, a regional director or a divisional director has been known to introduce, and many times in fact, introduce the concept of management by objective within his organization, and it has worked so effectively that it then worked its way to the top of the organization when the president and his team finally saw the picture, so to speak, and then introduced the senior objectives. But it can be done without that. You can work it out with your own team leader, because the basic common denominator here is each man is setting his own objectives, and they are measurable objectives. Russ?
What occurred to me is, what if the total of all of the objectives set by the men underneath you not add up to your objective?
As a senior objective?
Yes.
That's a good point. And in fact, you might even ask the question, if Sani sets the senior objective for, say, 1,000 disciple makers, then does he designate how much each division will produce of the 1,000? But the answer on that is no. And it is not intended to operate this way. The senior objective is set, and it's communicated down through the organization. The men throughout the organization write their objectives at the various levels, and eventually this gets reported back to the chief executive, and he looks this over. And Sani, in fact, will be doing this. And he will look at Scotty's objectives, and he will say, well, he'll say, Scotty, he said, I think there's one thing here you're overlooking. You don't have anything here for a self-development program. Or he'll say, I see that you only have two men down as possible area representatives this year. He said, we need more than two from your division. Is there any possibility that you could produce three? And Scotty would think this over, and he'd say, well, there is a possibility. We have a fellow in mind who has come along real well, and we were thinking of putting his name down for 1971, but if he's really needed for 70, it may be that by the end of the year we'd feel that he'd come along well enough to do this. And so they would work on that, and they would begin to focus their attention on this guy to see what they could do so that when the end of the year he would also be qualified. So you have this sort of a two-way street. the individuals are setting their objectives. That's the key thing. But if in the final analysis the president doesn't feel that it's adequate, then he can pass the word, we've got to do better. In a sales organization, this is often done, and the chief executive will set the total, like we're going to sell 2 million roller skates, and then he feeds it out through the organization, and it comes back, and everybody's total comes to only say 50 million short of his goal. So he will say, okay, that's satisfactory. Or he will say, no, it is not satisfactory. We must figure out some way of selling an additional 50,000 or whatever. You'll say, we need to hire so many more salesmen, or we need to do this or that. So that he doesn't really lose control, but at the same time, he is not telling everybody in the organization what they must do. And there's much better production when a man is setting his own objectives and accomplishing them than when he is trying to accomplish objectives that are handed down to him. There's a motivational factor here that is really tremendous.
This is just going back the other way from what you were saying. This is actually setting results and looking at them, working towards some group of results.
Yes.
If I, as a contact point, have a certain number of results that I want to make for a period of time, actually, then wouldn't it, on the other hand, as you look up the chain and say you look down, wouldn't it be good for me to know what an area representative or a regional staff, what's expected of him, in other words, what Russ expects his regional staff and his area staff?
Yes. And this is what, in fact, happens. Once you have set your objectives, then you sit down with Russ, and he looks them over, and he'll say, well, I think you could do better here. Or you might have a couple men in mind who you think by the end of the year will be MDMs. And you and he will talk this over, and he'll say, well, you know, my observation of so-and-so is this. And this process of MBO opens the door for communications in a very significant way, because when you're setting your objectives for the year and discussing it with your team leader, you are dialoguing about your objectives and the men who are involved in them, and it's a very, very helpful thing. But you do, in fact, have to know, you have to get his thinking on your objectives as well as your own. But the fact is, he doesn't set yours. You still set your own. Here's another thing that I think is significant here. Let's say that as a contact point or an area representative, my objective is to produce 20 new disciples by the end of the target period. And as I set this objective, I have in mind the experience factor that I need 3 men in basic Bible study to produce 1 disciple. So I say to myself, oh yeah, let's see, how many men do I have in basic Bible study? And so I say, I have 40 men in basic Bible study. That means I'm 20 men short. So then I set another new objective of recruiting 20 more men for basic Bible study. Further questions on this business of writing objectives?
Can you say limit to 4 or 5 objectives? But under those objectives, you have more quantitative sub-objectives, is that correct? So 4 or 5 are main objectives.
Well, the 4 or 5 or whatever you have to have are your objectives. These are what you have put down in writing and gone over with your team leader as the things that you will accomplish. Now, you have other things that you have to do, But I would prefer to think of those not so much as objectives as I would a do list.
Well, with the basic Bible study, is that some objective contributing to new disciples?
I think that would depend on how critical a need that was. And I think it would also depend on where your area ministry was. But it could very possibly be a main objective. Evangelism could very well be a main objective. For instance, some of the goals for the Pacific Area Navigators for 1970, ending December 31st, 1970, are to win 500 people to Christ through personal and small group evangelism. Another is to win 1,700 people to Christ through NAV-sponsored public evangelism. Another is to raise up 200 people who meet the standards of the new profile of a navigator disciple. Another is to develop 65 new disciple makers who meet the standards of the profile. And so on. These are the objectives for the region, for the division. And by the time you get this to a divisional level, why, you'll have a dozen objectives.
I had a question on this senior objective. Why did they arrive at 1, 3, and 10 years for setting these? Are these just arbitrary?
Yes, these are arbitrary figures, but a one-year period for objectives is about as short as they can be meaningfully. You can set shorter objectives, of course, but usually when you're planning, planning should take into account at least a one-year period for any kind of work that you're doing, and yet it's a short enough period of time so that you can check up on your progress and make changes and so on. So 1 year is simply an accepted short-range period, target period, and 3 years is an accepted medium range, and 10 to 15 years is considered long-range planning.
Well, it would seem that there has to be a great deal of flexibility in all this, because what we're dealing with is an extremely secular framework, and that even the matter of cost, when it says at a cost not to exceed, it may not be measurable in dollars, but say time, not to exceed a certain time limit that a person might place on a particular objective.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I'm just wondering what the experience has been as you observe this being applied in different countries, because what are measurable standards in, say, the United States would not be valid in, say, another culture.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And therefore,
you have to adjust.
Would have to be adjusted.
Yeah.
So it might be a one-year attainable objective in the U.S., maybe, say, a three-year one.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
Have you observed that?
I haven't. We don't have this in operation. We haven't had it in operation long enough to have made that kind of observation on it. And We really feel like we're learning and experimenting. We feel the necessity for developing management skills, and it may very well be that we'll work with this a while and decide that this does not, in fact, suit itself to the navigator work and toss it out. But in the process, we will have learned what not to do, and that ought to take us a step closer to learning what to do.
Well, it works. A lot of people in this particular division find that we don't know what we're going to be doing for 3 years. 1 year is
true.
Is that unrealistic to write a 3 year objective?
I think if you're in a contact point, it's pretty tough. And if you can write one-year objectives in that kind of a situation, or even two-year objectives, well, I think you're doing very well.
How far down the ladder should this be communicated?
Objectives are normally written down through the first level of supervision. which means that technically area representatives would write objectives, but men in contact points are not a first level of supervision yet. They are independent. And this guideline or policy is extended to those in independent responsibilities, so that it's down through the first level of supervision plus those who are in independent responsibilities, such as salesmen. So actually, in our work, this would be written down through the contact point level. Objectives would be written by people in contact point assignments. Yeah.
When you say a three-year objective, do you write that objective once every 3 years, or every year do you write a new three-year objective?
If you have a three-year objective, you usually update it each year so that it continues to be a three-year objective. If you have a 10-year objective, you update it every year or two or three. Huh?
When is this supposed to go into effect?
We're working on it in different parts of the organization now. Scotty and his gang have worked on it. Mayhall worked on it earlier this year with his gang, and they've written their objectives, and he's turned those in for his division. And so we want to, as we're able, we want to get our whole staff doing it. Yes.
You said update the three-year objective. You mean keep the same target date?
No.
Move the target date 3 years?
You move it down 1 year. If you have a three-year objective and you write it in 1970, then in 1971, you extend that three-year objective one more year.
But
it's still 3 years.
You're going to want to evaluate whether you really have what you were achieving in 1973.
Well, yes, but you see, each year, when you have a three-year objective, you're thinking and planning 3 years down the road, and you're not measuring the results of that three-year objective. In other words, you don't wait till 1973 to measure the results of that. What you have planned for 1973 at the beginning of 1973 becomes your objectives for 1973, a one-year objective. And by that time, you have continued to develop the three-year plan, so that it's down to 1976.
Should you plan first a long-range objective, and put that one-year objective fit into that? Say a third of that?
I think it's more realistic to plan your one-year objective, because you can get a hold of facts a lot easier that you can project an estimate on for a year, not three. It's the one-year objective for which we want the results, and we want to measure progress.
Doug? Should your long-range objective, should you have long-range personal objectives, personal development objectives?
Yes, I think you should. Theoretically.
You should, Doug.
Yeah, you should. Right.
Would personal objectives come under supportive objectives?
No, I think those are personal. I still think we would keep family and personal objectives separate from this. This is an organizational thing, and the other is personal. And I know that there's a very, very close relationship between our personal lives and our ministries, but I'd still be inclined to keep them separate, but you wouldn't have to.
Did you have some things you were going to share on how to use these objectives?
Yes, that's what I'm going to do right now. Okay? When Roger Bannister was training himself to run the four-minute mile, which had never previously been done, in his training process, he stationed men around his one-mile track at the quarter-mile point. And as he passed this quarter-mile point, the timer would call out his time to him, so that at the quarter point, he knew whether he had run this quarter mile too rapidly or too slowly, because in his mind he already had an objective set on how fast he should have reached this point the halfway point, and the three-quarter point. And the same principle is true when a person sets measurable objectives for his ministry. It's then possible for him to measure his own progress and make whatever adjustments are necessary. And there's a good scripture on this. In Galatians 6:4, the NEB says, "Each man should examine his own conduct for himself. Then he can measure his achievement by comparing himself with himself and not with anyone else." And with measurable objectives, you can compare your progress. Let's say that you're going to do this in March, June, and September. You have your objective set. You say you're going to produce 20 disciples, and at the beginning of, or at the end of March, you evaluate your progress on this. And you see that because of transfers or men who just have discontinued the studies, that you've lost men from your basic Bible study and you've got to bring some more men in there. Or you can see that some of the men who you had in mind for these 20 have not progressed too well, and so you're going to do some special work with them, or you're going to reduce your objective or something. But anyway, you still have to check on your progress. You evaluate your progress. You can do it quarterly, you can do it semi-annually, you can do it monthly, however you're going to do it, you can still do it. And that is the process, then, of evaluation, which was one of our fundamentals. See if I can dig this out here. Gotten everything but it. That is the process, then, of evaluating. And there's some very simple questions you can ask here. First of all, you ask yourself, where am I? When March rolls around, or any time you want to start your evaluation, you just ask yourself, where am I? And you obtain that information by your reports or whatever, your personal observation. Then you ask yourself, where should I be? This is what Bannister did. This is what you would be doing. Where should I be in terms of my objective? And then why the difference? And that's analysis. Why the difference? And then what am I going to do about it? Is the corrective action that you take. You evaluate your own progress, and then you also can evaluate the progress of your men. This is essentially a performance appraisal approach type of thing that's done in the military and in business. But so often, the performance appraisals are based on personality and opinion, which is often ambiguous, and there's a difference of opinion. For instance, I think of an occasion where we have a divisional director who says about an area rep, "I don't think he's doing the job, he can't do the job." And you talk to the area man about it, and he says, "Yes, I am doing the job, and I can do the job." So all you have is two personal opinions. You bring a third man in, and he evaluates, he goes around the area with the man, and he talks to the man and meets the people he's working with, and he comes up with a conclusion, "Yes, this guy can do the job." Well, then you have two against one. But where are you? Now, if that area representative if his name was Charlie and he had four specific objectives that were measurable, then instead of saying, "Well, in my opinion, he's not an area rep, he can't do the job," you would say, "Well, how has he done with objective number one? And how has he done on his other objectives?" And then his performance appraisal would be based on an objective evaluation of what he was able to accomplish. Russ?
Isn't there then the value judgment of whether his objectives were realistic or overly optimistic?
Yes, then you have to get into that. You have to get into that and you have to discuss it. But it does give you a basis for working with the man. And if you decide that his objectives were too high, and if you want to give the man another 1 or 2 years in an assignment to see what he can do, you still are working with objectives that can be measured, and in a year or two, you can still measure again. And if it seems like he is constantly in the border area, the gray area of really being able to perform as an area representative, then you would begin to conclude that perhaps his gifts would suit him better for some other type of ministry. But it's a much more objective basis for evaluation than personality traits or personal opinions. Now, if he has not made adequate progress, anybody has not made adequate progress in one or more of his objectives, then there are usually, or there are only, 4 reasons why not. And these are the 4 reasons. He doesn't know how to do it, he doesn't want to do it, or he doesn't know what to do, he doesn't want to do it, or he isn't adequately equipped to do it. And this is a very interesting little evaluation they gave us, because it shows us where the real responsibility lies. We ask ourselves, well, if Charlie did not know what to do, whose fault is that? Is that Charlie's fault, or is it his leader's fault? And if Charlie didn't know how to do the job, whose fault would this be? Whose responsibility? Would it be the leaders? One vote for the leader. Anybody voting for Charlie? He doesn't know how to do it. That's right. That's right. It's joint accountability. Now, supposing he didn't want to do it, whose responsibility would that be?
His wife.
His wife.
Again, if you vote, the leader might not have motivated.
You're voting for both? Any other votes?
I'm voting for Charlie.
You're voting for Charlie? Well, it's joint accountability. And if he is not adequately equipped, supposing we send him out to Tucson, there's no military base, there's no campus, there's no town, they're just jackrabbits, see? Or if we ask him to type a letter, and we don't give him a typewriter, we don't give him the funds that he needs, this is what equipment really is. If there are organizational barriers to the job, he's not equipped. And it's very interesting that we as leaders carry the major share of responsibility for whatever his problems were. Now, we probably wouldn't show this to Charlie, because he'd relax and he'd say, well, my failure is your fault. But it does help us in evaluation, because these are very key questions as to why he has not produced. And we would even probably, in our work, we would get into the area of gifts. And we would conclude, well, he is not gifted to do evangelism, or he is not gifted to build in the lives of men, or he is not gifted for a spiritual ministry. Questions on that?
He's going to give us a copy of this, too.
No, I don't have this mimeographed. If you want a copy of this, you can just copy these questions or this little square, and you'll have it. Yeah. How far?
Up a little way.
Right.
It's become more of a problem than of relating rather than going up or down. It's not demoting necessarily, it's more promoting.
Right.
It's a matter of relating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This type of management technique has several advantages. It makes it possible for each man to set his own objectives and then to measure his own progress. This is scriptural. It's a primary factor in motivation. Desire accomplished is sweet to the soul, and when we set our objectives and accomplish them ourselves, this is a prime motivating factor. Thirdly, it stimulates precise thinking and planning. And fourthly, it makes performance appraisal on this basis much more objective. It gives us an objective evaluation of our men. Any questions? You want to go back to anything? This is the all I have in the way of presentation, so if you have any questions that came to mind as we were going through this, if you want to go back to something, you'll take a minute or two for any questions. Mert? It makes it possible for a man to set his own objectives and to measure his own progress. And the second one was that it is a prime motivating factor to have specific objectives and then to accomplish them. Desire accomplished is sweet to the soul. Any comments you'd like to make, Skip?
Sarge, what assignment did you give yesterday?
On the assignment, you are to write your objectives for this coming target period, which would be June 1 through May 31, 1971. Ministry objectives, right. And these should be turned in to your regional director at coffee break tomorrow morning. Now, these don't have to be finalized. In other words, you don't have to have this completely thought through. So this is the final draft of your objectives. The idea of having you turn them in to your regional director tomorrow morning is to see if we are getting through clearly on how to write objectives. And as he goes over them, he may have some questions that he would like to discuss with you or with myself about the objectives. And then at some later date, I think you'll probably be turning in finalized objectives. But what we're after here is getting some experience in writing objectives according to the formula, so that we've written them and have an opportunity to discuss them and ask any questions that come up as a result of having worked on them. And yesterday I made myself available at 5 o'clock. I was in our meeting room, the Cantilla room. Yeah. At 5 o'clock, and some of the fellows who had been working on their objectives came over and we talked about them and cleared up a few things. So if that would be of help today, I'll be over there from 5 to 6. And if you've had an opportunity to do some work on these, then you may have some questions you'd like to ask. Okay? Sam, lead us in a word of prayer and we'll be dismissed.
Our Father, we thank you for every bit of help you send our way. We thank you for teaching us these fundamental things that will help us serve you, serve your cause, your works right here. Now we pray that you give us clarity of mind, thought, and enable us to do a good job for your sake. In Jesus' name,
amen. Amen.